In this video, I'm not going to be on a lovely secluded island in the middle of the Isles of Scilly. Quite the opposite, in fact. I find myself 8 miles off Land's End and I'm smack bang in the middle of a traffic separation scheme. Now, this lighthouse was notoriously unpopular with the lighthouse keepers, and the reason for that is it's so isolated, and also their relief days would quite often get delayed, weeks, maybe even months on end. Thankfully, it's not quite that bad anymore, although that's not to say that we don't get stuck from time to time. Anyway, welcome to Wolf Rock. As with most of the Austral lighthouses that I work on, Wolf Rock can only be gained access by helicopter. It was also the first lighthouse in the world to have a helipad constructed at the very top. It's usually at this point that I suddenly think, have I remembered to pack everything, or am I going to have to dry myself with an old worktop every time I get out of the shower? We initially get dropped on the lighthouse with basic supplies, and then the helicopter will go off and return to base to collect a freight load. During a 12-day trip, we usually do about 2 to 3 freight runs, but this all depends on what work we'll be carrying out. On this particular trip, we're doing a technical inspection, but we're also replacing the safety nets around the helipad, which is probably one of our favourite jobs to do. And once all the freight had arrived, we can then disperse it throughout the lighthouse to whichever level it needs to be. It's without doubt that getting onto station and also getting off station is the most tiring part of the job. Each trip has a particular set of priorities, and unfortunately, I don't mean the wine. We get on station, get everything set up, and I decided to get a head start on the technical inspection. The test that I'm carrying out here is just to check that the main light is getting the correct power to it. The lamps on Wolf Rock are 35 watts, so it's important that the results come close to this. Thankfully, the inspection shows that it's all working fine. I then power up the standby light, which is main light 2. Once it's powered up, I give it 10 minutes to warm up, and then I carry out exactly the same procedure. The results, however, came back slightly under power. So after doing a minor modification, the light was back within spec and could be signed off. Dinner time. One of my colleagues was very kind to cook us this lovely meal. The other colleague, however, decided to put on this horrendous movie. I couldn't watch it anymore, so I decided to go upstairs, make my bed, and retire for the night. The next morning, the weather was looking perfect to start doing the heli nets, and as the weather can change so rapidly, we thought it was best to put the technical inspection on hold. Over breakfast, we had a team brief and read through all the documentation required. As you can imagine, there's a lot of health and safety involved when it comes to replacing the heli nets. We all have to go through various training courses to make sure that we're safe to work. There's also a lot of paperwork and planning that goes involved before we do the job to make sure everyone is up to scratch. We do our final checks, and then 2 of us will go out into the nets. The 3rd person will stay back on the helipad, mainly to assist us with various tasks, which you'll see in this video, but also to ensure there's an extra set of eyes to make sure that everyone is working safely, and also to keep an eye on things like the weather. Once the outer bar's been removed, we then pass it back to our colleague on the helipad, who can then thread the new net around the bar. The bar is then handed back to the guys in the nets. They can then fasten the bar and temporarily tie the new net over the old net, ensuring that there are no gaps for people to fall through.
Left over right.
With the new net primarily tied in, the old net can then start to be cut away and retrieved back onto the helipad. With the old net fully removed, the new nets can be permanently lashed in. We just need to repeat this process another 15 times. But as always, the great British weather had to get in the way. Wind speed too high and the risk of thunder and lightning, it was time to come back inside and continue with some of the other work. Once the nets were all done, it was back inside to complete the technical inspection, as well as any other work that needed to be completed. Of course, this video is a very condensed insight to the work that's carried out. As I mentioned earlier, the technical inspection checks a lot of the aids to navigation. But we also carry out tests on the domestic applications, as well as everyone's favourite, pack testing.
Sorry, did you just say favourite?
And when we're not working, we quite often spend time up in the lantern room, just watching the world go by. Or down in the kitchen, watching a movie, having some food. Although my favourite is getting outside, flying the drone during a decent sunset. And also in my downtime, I quite often do video tours on social media. It proves to be quite popular. And this is exactly how I'm going to end this video. So we start off in the tower base, right in the depths of the lighthouse now. It's pretty bare in here. It's got a couple of fuel pumps. The main fuel tank there, that holds 3,600 litres of fuel. This is the old entrance before the helipad was put there. Keepers would have come on and off from here. Unfortunately, I can't open the doors today because the sea is too rough. And although I'm about 30 foot above the water here, waves do easily crash over the top of the door here. But as you can see, we've got shower curtains and a secondary door. There's a small hole in the bottom of the door and you do get spray coming through. So that's just there to prevent the actual interior getting flooded. We've just got some life jackets and some hauling rope. But that's about it in here really. So we'll go up to the next level. Up in the engine room now, and we have a Lister TS3 engine. It's a three-cylinder diesel engine with an alternator bolted onto the side. If you saw my previous video on Round Island, you may have seen that we completely rebuilt and repainted one of these, and it looks absolutely mint. Whereas this one, as you can see, is looking a bit tired, so it's going to need the same treatment fairly soon. So the lighthouse is primarily powered from solar panels. And when we're not here, the engine probably only comes on maybe once a month or so, sometimes not even that. But when solar gain is really poor due to bad weather or during the winter months when the daylight hours are reduced, sometimes the engine needs to come on to top up the batteries. However, when we're here, we put a lot more of a demand on the facility system. So this generally runs 24/7 whilst we're here for, generally it's 12 days we're here for. However, a cooling fan has failed. So this can overheat really quickly. So during the evening, we've been turning the engine off, which has actually been really lovely. And it means we can close the door overnight. But during the day, we've been having this door open just to allow the airflow to come in to keep the engine cool. You've also got your day run tank. I think there's about 3 to 4 days of fuel is in there. And then when that gets down, there's a sensor in there and it automatically pumps fuel up from the bottom through some filters and into there. And then we've got the engine control cubicle. It's flashing away at the moment just because the emergency stop button's pushed in. Just some breakers and then the battery chargers for the batteries. We've also got a pyrogen system, which is a fire suppression. So just in case there's a fire in here, this is triggered by two sensors. You've got a heat sensor and a smoke sensor. And when both are triggered, these canisters will empty. And basically, I believe there's powder in there, and when it empties, it starves the oxygen or removes the oxygen in the room, which then will put the fire out. There's also sensors when the fire detector goes off, it will shut down the engine and it will cut the fuel off as well. So hopefully any fire is extinguished and any damage is reduced as much as possible. But I'm going to open up the door now and turn the engine on. That was the door. So we've got the bathroom here and just everything as you'd expect in a bathroom really. But we also have the added touch of the boiler, which always gives you a nice hinted scent of diesel when you dry yourself. But and you've got some station documents there as well. But that's everything in here really. Nice and simple. So coming into the kitchen now. And as you can see, it's pretty compact, but it does the job. And it's always nice at the end of the day when we finish work to come to here, watch a bit of TV, do a bit of cooking. You can see how small the oven is, and we can actually do a full roast in there. We just have to jiggle the times a bit. Also have a double hob. That isn't my stomach gurgling, it's the sink. The outlet is down at the base, and at high tide, you do get a bit of gargling going on. But there's a valve under here that we shut when we leave station, and it's just to avoid any water surging up the pipe and then flooding the kitchen. But yeah, that's about it in here. So just up from the kitchen, you have the bedroom. Now, apologies for the mess. We are getting off tomorrow, so we're packing our bags, all ready to go. But as you can see, the bunks are shaped to the curvature of the wall, which does mean you do have to sleep at a bit of a funny angle. Bit weird at first, but you do get used to it. But Wolf Rock, for some reason, they just seem particularly narrow and uncomfortable compared to the others. And at the moment, there's only 3 of us on station, but if there's 4 of us, one person gets the short straw and has to go up into the top bunk. You can't even sit up in there, so it's never, you don't really spend that much time in there. You just go in there to go to sleep. These ones, at least you can sit up, watch a movie on your laptop or read a book, but you need to use the ladders to get up there. But it's very cosy being inside the bunk during a storm. You can hear everything going on outside, big thuds on the tower, the whole tower starts shaking, but you're wrapped up all nice and cosy in your bunk. And just up from the bedroom, you've got the battery room level. Now we'll go there in just a second, but first, all of this equipment here is for charging the batteries. Now primarily we charge them by solar panels. They're outside and the energy that they produce come into here, into this cubicle, where it's regulated and then sent to the batteries in the battery room. We also have your fuse units, and then we've also got the battery chargers. Now these, they only come on when the generator downstairs comes on. So the generator provides AC electricity. That comes up into here. It's then converted to DC, which is then sent into the battery room. And as you can see, there's quite a few batteries in here. So each one of these isn't actually a battery, it's a cell. And a series of cells will make up a battery bank. Each cell is 2 volts, and there's 12 cells in a bank, which makes this one 24 volts. And you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 banks in here. They all do something slightly different. So this is the facilities bank, and it provides power to the domestic setup. There's also the telemetry gets its power from the facilities. The main banks, you've got main bank 1 and main bank 2. These provide power to the aids to navigation, so your light, optic drive, fog signal, etc. Now the reason there's 2 main banks is this is main bank 1, and if for any reason anything goes wrong with this, it will automatically transfer over to this bank here as a backup. And then if for any reason this was to go wrong, it would then go onto your emergency. So a backup and a backup again. Next level up from the battery room, you've got the service room. And again, apologies for the mess. As I said earlier, we're getting off tomorrow and all the equipment's coming up here, ready to be picked up tomorrow. This is also the entrance slash exit room through that door there, which takes you up to the upper levels. So up here is where we do a lot of our sort of inspections to make sure all the aids to navigation are functioning correctly. You've got the main fog signal cubicle, and then you've got the detector head cubicle in here. I've done a bit of work in here during this trip. So there's a visibility sensor outside. In here is all the electronics that you use to calibrate it. This main rack here is like pretty much the whole lighthouse in one rack. You've got your light control. You've got your telemetry interface, kind of like a dashboard on your car, just tells you what's going on in the lighthouse at the moment, which as you can see, everything's looking all right. You've got your main nav light control. So we can go in there and we can turn whatever light on or off that we want. It also gives you the status and the optic rotation just to make sure everything's functioning okay. Then you've got your fog signal control. This controls your drive unit, and it can also override. There's cyclic control. So to save power, this only gets energized every 17 minutes. It comes on for 3 minutes. The detector head does a check outside. If everything's all good, it turns off again for 17 minutes. However, when it turns on, if it spots fog or bad visibility, it will send a signal to say, we need to turn the fog signal on. And then it'll all power up until it does its check again and goes, oh, it's all clear outside. A bit further down below is your battery monitoring, just to make sure the battery levels are all correct. A bit more on the fog signal, and then you've just got some breakers, just like in your house, in your consumer unit, just to isolate some of the systems. And that's about it from there. You've also got your water tanks. So as you can see here, 1,250 litres capacity. So that all stays up here, and then it just goes down through the tower for a filtration system and for a UV unit to make sure that it's safe. A little bit of fridge space. And that's pretty much it for this room. So we'll go up onto the mezzanine deck to look at the lantern. And as you can see, it's a pretty amazing view up here. You've got a fourth order optic, and this rotates continuously all day, every day. And it's controlled by a sensor, which is down here. And when the light fades outside, the resistance will build up and it will send a signal to the little rack below to say, turn on the light. And then it will stay on until the morning time when the sun comes up and it's light enough to turn the light off. But it's also a very nice place to have a little bit of an office. It's quite nice to spend a bit of time up here in the evenings, especially when it's really good weather, or even when it's bad weather actually. But it is nice to come up here and chill out for a bit. It's probably what makes Wolf Rock quite a nice station, just because we've got this space up here just to kind of sit and watch the world go by. So I'll take you outside now onto the gallery. It's So there's the boat landing from the very top. Over here, we've got the visibility detector. This speaks with the fog signal. During times of low visibility, it'll take a reading, and if it seems that the visibility is too low, it'll send a signal to turn the fog signal on. All around the outside, you've also got the solar panels. As we keep going around, there's not much else really. Just lots of solar panels. All these little boxes are junction boxes for the solar panels. And that's it, up to the mezzanine deck. Up on the mezzanine deck, you've got your fog emitters. That's what makes all the noise during bad visibility. You've got your emergency light. And just the roof of the lighthouse. So before the helipad was here, this would have been the very, very top of the lighthouse. As you can see, it's covered in bird poo. Luckily, it's not that bad at the moment, but when it is bad, it absolutely stinks. So we've got three different access hatches. And the reason for this is all dependent on the wind direction. The wind today is coming straight at me from this direction. So we've got one of the rear hatches open. And that's because if the helicopter has to land on, they have to fly into wind to land on and also take off. And for us to load the boot and unload the boot, it's better to have the rear of the helicopter by the hatch. So we'd be using this one today, but it can change at any time. We always leave one hatch open all the time we're here. And the reason for that is because when the helicopter drops stuff onto the helipad, if you've got the doors shut, they can actually cover all the doors and then you're stuck. There's no way you'd be able to open those doors. So we always leave one open unless we're working up there, and then we close it. So now we're at the top on the helipad. Now this is the only way on and off the lighthouse now. We can use the boat landing, but it's so rare. The sea state has to be absolutely perfect, and even then it's quite high risk. We don't do the bosun's chair like they used to back in the day, so it's really a last resort. So we'll land on by the helicopter, we'll open up one of the hatches, and we'll climb down and lower all of our gear down with it at the same time. That is all from Wolf Rock Lighthouse. I hope you enjoyed the video and found it interesting enough. Please leave a comment below with anything you would like to see in future videos, obviously within reason. Also some feedback would be great as well. This is all completely new to me. Trying to talk to a camera is something that I'm finding quite difficult. One of the bits of feedback I've had already is to try and be in front of the camera more, talking to it, and I've discovered that I'm not very good at it. Anyone that knows me knows that I can talk for England. However, it seems to be that as soon as I put this camera in my face, it just doesn't happen. So hopefully it's going to take a bit of time and a bit of practice to improve on that. With the suggestions, as I say, within reason, this is my job. It's something that I'm very passionate about, and I absolutely love my job. And I do these videos in my free time to try and give you guys a bit of an insight. I'll try and do what I can when I can, but obviously work will always come first. But the main thing I want to do is to show you guys what we get up to, mainly to inspire other people to get into this line of work, if not very similar. When I was at school, I had no idea that this job existed. And it's something that I really try and promote, because I think that if it's something that you want to pursue as a career, then do it. I wish I got into it a lot earlier. Not that I'm that old. Anyway, in the next video, I will be in the Channel Islands. I'll be on a small remote island all by itself. It's about 8 miles from Alderney, which is the closest island to France. So I'll be here for 2 weeks, carrying out all various types of work, and hopefully you can see what we get up to at the time. But this is Caskets Lighthouse. See you then.